Consumerism is the joy of the buying, and materialism is the love of the thing itself, the actual material object. And potentially controversially, what I'm saying in the book is we actually need to embrace materialism.
One for mum, one for dad, one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be in Australia.
Dead, buried, cremated.
G'day and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Australia Institute. And in today's episode, I'm going to try and convince you to buy a book about buying less stuff. Let's see how I go.
Some of the best deals come a couple of days before Christmas.
I've just started my Christmas shopping, so I'm an absolute lunatic.
A 34-hour spending spree.
Lots of people spending money. You can hear the tills, as they could say, ring.
$2.1 billion poorer. But who says you can't buy happiness?
It's that crazy time of year again, where our shopping lists are a mile long. Presents for mum and dad who already have everything, more plastic toys for the kids, soaps for Auntie Shaz, socks for Uncle Baz, secret Santas for work colleagues, shopping trolleys piled high with food, drinks, ingredients for abundant Christmas lunches. Whoa, it's no wonder we need holidays. And just when we think it's over, the Boxing Day sales start, so we can go shopping all over again.
Along with the cricket and the Sydney to Hobart, Australia's other great Boxing Day sport is, of course, shopping.
If it feels as if the culture of Christmas has changed somewhat from your own childhood, it probably has, according to Richard Dennis's new book, Curing Affluenza.
So, Richard, what is affluenza?
Affluenza is the spending of money we don't have to buy things we don't need to impress people we don't know.
And keeping up with the Joneses.
And we've all done it.
Yeah.
The book is not about saying how stupid it is to try and fit in. It's not about saying that culture is irrelevant, fashion doesn't exist. It's the opposite. It says, look, as a society, there's a limitless amount of stuff we can buy and not use.
Yeah.
That's true. There's a million things that we haven't bought yet that we could buy and throw away. But if we do that, well, the planet is going to be destroyed by us. So we need to rethink why on earth we're buying all this stuff if we want to be serious about the impact that 8 billion people living on this planet are going to have. Sure, we need carbon prices and sure, we need a ban on plastic bags. But we've also got to ask why, after 7,000 years of recorded history, we're the first people to think the faster you buy stuff and bury it in the ground, the wealthier we'll become.
It does seem to me that even when I was younger, and I'm not that old.
So last week.
That's right. You know, Sundays were for going on a bicycle ride with my family and we maybe had an ice cream. And now the thing that you do on the weekends is you go shopping. You go to the mall or whatever. It's just much more a part of the fabric of the culture.
Absolutely. And look, it's a bit scary. I'm an economist and I've written a book about culture. So let's just put it out there. Not what my discipline is known for. But yeah, there's hints in the word. We talk about recreational shopping and we talk about consumer culture.
Yeah.
These are new ideas. They're not evil. They're not stupid. They're just new. And for most of human history, they didn't exist. So we've got this new culture in Australia where, yeah, a fun thing to do with the family on Sundays, go shopping. And let's be clear, 30 years ago, we didn't do that.
No.
And in most countries, people don't do that. So it's not inevitable. It's not permanent. It's just something we've got into the habit of doing. It's the culture we've created. And what I'm trying to say in the book is that we need to understand the importance of culture. We need to see where it came from, who drove it, because culture shapes our decisions, but our decisions shape culture.
Yeah.
So when people started taking their own bags to the shops, it was easier to ban bags. Which came first, the individual change or the regulatory change? Well, one makes the other easier. So if we're worried about consumer culture, we need to be aware of it, and then we need to kind of work at different levels to do something about it.
And it does seem to me to be the kind of thing where, you know, changing a culture seems big and difficult to do, but even in recent environmental history, I guess everyone's now very conscious about turning the taps off and fixing their leaks and, you know, only using your sprinklers on every second day. And that's really become ingrained, for example, in quite a short space of time.
Absolutely. So big picture, culture changes all the time. When I was growing up, I was told to leave the lights on because turning the lights on and off was bad for the light bulbs. I'm not kidding. And I wasn't the only person to be told this because, you know, when I was a kid, no one was worried about climate change. Mm. Electricity was very, very cheap and light bulbs cost more.
Yeah.
So we worried more about the light bulbs than the electricity. But the biggest cultural change that I've seen in my life and that people can associate with is what we now call cafe culture. I went out for breakfast for the first time in my life in 1994. I'd never been out for breakfast in my life until I was 24 years old and I paid someone $15 to scramble my eggs. It was great. Been doing it ever since. Now, more people are employed today in cafes than were employed in mining at the peak of the mining boom in Australia.
Wow, is that true?
Twice as many.
Yeah.
And that's because our culture changed.
Mm.
And we now spend money on stuff we didn't used to spend money on. So we've changed our culture. And in turn, we've changed the economy. So it's easy for people to feel disempowered. It's easy for people to think the world economy is in charge of us. But the world economy didn't invent smashed avocado. The world economy didn't invent the popularity of the flat white. We did. And because millions of us spend a lot of money on it, the market provides heaps of it. Now, in the book, I don't for a minute suggest that all we need to do is change our spending habits and powerful forces will give up and run away and we'll win. But we underestimate our power when we don't understand that cafe culture came about because we wanted to spend money on breakfast.
Mm.
And as a result, we're spending money, less money on other stuff. We've shaped the economy massively by choosing to spend lots of money
on a particular thing.
So if we stop spending enormous amounts of money on shoes we don't wear, shirts we don't wear, hot dog warmers we've never used, like if we stop importing all that crap and spent the money on services, learning to sing, learning to dance, get a massage, buying breakfast,
yeah,
getting a maths tutor for your kids,
the economy suddenly looks radically different.
Radically different. Who did that? Who was in charge of that? No one.
Mm.
Who was in charge of cafe culture? No one.
Hipsters.
Hipsters. Absolutely. Thank you, smashed avocado.
Get ready for Christmas for a Warehouse Pride.
Harvey Norman Christmas sale is now on.
Coles presents the perfect Christmas.
That's why I pick Woolies for Christmas.
But Richard makes the distinction between consumerism and materialism. He argues that materialism is the act of cherishing the things we own, caring for our things, repairing our appliances and mending our own clothes, so as not to squander our limited resources.
But when it comes to some of those things where we still do need to buy a new washing machine or a new appliance, those things seem to have planned obsolescence now, and we've really shifted away from getting things repaired, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is hard. You know, some people say, well, I want to get my washing machine repaired, but I can't find someone to repair it.
Or it's cheaper to buy a new thing than
that's
get
right.
it repaired.
Absolutely. But again, that's cultural.
Mm.
Once upon a time, we expected our appliances to last for decades. My parents' first fridge lasts for 40 years. I had the one fridge in my house the whole time I was growing up.
Yeah.
Never occurred to anyone to say, oh, we should need this year's colour fridge. So once upon a time, culturally, we had high expectations of people who made fridges. Now, if we hear that fridges break down after 10 years, most people think, oh, I probably won't have it that long anyway. So our expectations, our cultural expectations affect the way that the retailers and the wholesalers and the manufacturers behave. But also, if you're the only person in a city that wants to get something repaired, then no one's going to set up a repair business.
Mm.
But if lots of people want to get stuff repaired, then someone will set up a repair business.
Yeah.
This gets hard. I was in Norway recently, one of the richest countries in the world, looking for some scrambled eggs on a Sunday. Couldn't find any. No breakfast in Norway on Sunday.
Oh.
It's not what Norwegians do. So being the only guy that wants breakfast in Oslo on a Sunday is a lonely thing. Being the only person in a city that wants to get their washing machine repaired is a lonely thing. But when lots of people make clear that they'd be willing to pay for something, then people will set things up. And then the more of them set up, the cheaper they get. Now, a big barrier, and again, this is cultural, a big barrier to repair has been the unavailability of spare parts.
Yeah.
The people that make stuff don't want to sell spare parts.
Mm.
They want to sell a new washing machine. But with 3D printing technology, for example, it's now viable. It's now viable for someone to actually fabricate the one little bit of plastic that you need or the one little bit of metal that you need.
Yeah.
That it makes it in turn possible to get things repaired. So around the world now, things called repair cafes are actually setting up. Combine the smashed avocado with the broken toaster. But again, this is cultural. If we all want to do this stuff, it'll get easier and cheaper for us to do it.
Mm.
But culture means we can change the rules as well. What if manufacturers had to offer 10-year warranties?
Mm.
We can do that.
Yeah.
We're in charge. We can make them. And what if they have to take them back when they break down and the disposal costs are all on them?
And not on us.
And not on us. So our individual decisions matter, but the rules we collectively make matter as well. And what I'm trying to say in the book is it's not either or. It's not conscious consumerism or optimal policy. If we want to change the world, we're probably going to have to pull more than one lever.
And it's just a reminder, too, that small changes can have a big impact. I'm sure back in the day, manufacturers did used to care a little bit more about their product, and then all of a sudden it becomes the consumer's responsibility and things shift.
That's right. When did that change? Whose fault was it?
Mm.
Don't know. Mm. But it changed.
Yep.
It's changed in my lifetime. So why can't it change again? In some countries, they still do get things repaired. We shop on Sundays and don't get things repaired. Some countries never shop on Sundays and do get things repaired. So, again, we're kind of led to believe there is no alternative. But if we look around the world, we see heaps of alternatives. If we look back in history, we know things used to be different.
Yeah.
So why, when we look forward, do we feel so constrained? Doesn't mean it's easy. Doesn't mean it's inevitable. But to believe there's no alternative to the current version of capitalism, in which buying food we don't eat and burying it in the ground makes us rich, that's a new idea. We can stick with it if we want to, and we can change it if we want to.
Merry Christmas, merry, merry Christmas from your Kmart Christmas store. Save on sweaters and on hats, bowling balls and baseball bats. Cameras, TVs.
Look, it's a key difference that I stumbled onto when I sat down to write the book. For me, consumerism is the love of buying things, the purchase, the act of getting the new thing. And we've all enjoyed getting a present or buying some new stuff. Great. But that thrill is transient. It's temporary. So for me, consumerism's the joy of the buying. And materialism is the love of the thing itself, the actual material object. And potentially controversially, what I'm saying in the book is we actually need to embrace materialism. We do. And I used to treat them as if they were the same word. I don't anymore. We need to love our stuff. Because if we loved our stuff, if we cared for it and maintained it, the last thing we'd want to do is throw away something we love in order to get the thrill of buying something new. I mean, if you've got a puppy and it's a beautiful little puppy and the puppy makes you so happy and then it grows up and it's a year old and a cuter puppy comes along, not many people kill their puppy to go get the new cuter one.
Yeah.
But we do that for chairs, we do that for phones, we do that for shirts, we do that for shoes. Now that consumerism, well, okay, we could do that if we want, but let's not pretend that we love the things we bought. What we loved was buying them.
Yeah.
And then we got bored with them and we went out and loved buying something else again. So I guess I'm saying if 8 billion people are going to share the planet, we can't all love buying stuff every weekend. So I think that's why we need to change the culture.
So this actually reminds me, I recently read The Magical Art of Tidying Up or The Life-Changing Joy or whatever. And one thing that really struck me about that I think relates to your book is only keeping things that spark joy. And if you get rid of all the other stuff, which is obviously the consumerism element, you'd be surrounded by things that you actually really love and value.
Absolutely.
And I found that to be the case.
Look, absolutely. So the sort of the minimalism movement, the tidy movement, is all kind of part of this, but that's a double-edged sword. If we chuck all that stuff out that wasn't making us happy, if we chuck it in the bin, we might feel tidy, But that's a lot of the world's resources just went right in the bin.
Yeah.
So I'd say to all those people tidying up their house, sell it online for a buck. I mean it. Let's help someone else find it. Let's hope someone else gets some joy out of it. Because the worst thing would be if we all came up with these minimalist households that made us feel wonderfully clean and minimal. And then next year we decided minimal white was out and minimal grey was in.
Yeah.
And we chucked out all our minimal white stuff to become tidy and mineral grey.
Mm.
For me, that's still consumerism.
Yeah.
You can be a minimalist consumerist
if
you're chucking out that minimal stuff all the time. So I don't care whether you've got sleek Nordic interiors or stuffy old couches. I just hope you love what you've got. Look after it, care for it, maintain it, and don't tell yourself every 2 years it's time to buy a new set of soft furnishings to make your life happy.
Mm.
That's what the furniture shop wants you to think.
Well, when I did look at my possessions, and what did strike me was where I had bought something of quality that I did love, it had lasted forever, and I did make more of an effort to look after it, and all of those kinds of things were wrapped up in the value, I guess, that I placed on it and not just the buying of it.
That's right. And again, you know, if people want to spend $1,000 on the world's nicest boots and they're the best boots in the world and that makes them complete as a human being, I say good on you. Love those boots, care for them, cherish them, please look after them for 10 or 20 years. And when they don't fit anymore, find someone else who might get that pleasure from them. You know, I think that a lot of progressives have been caught up in this trap of, oh, I shouldn't like my fixie bike, but I do.
Yeah.
Or my book collection, it's other people shouldn't be materialistic, but I love my books so much.
Yeah.
My answer is fantastic. That's great. Knock your socks off. And if I love an old car and you love a fixie bike and someone else loves their shoe collection, we don't have to beat each other up about the things we chose to love. This is the opposite. We need to see, hey, we've got something in common here. We like looking after our things. We care for them. We maintain them. We're proud of them. We don't have to divide around tribal Holden Ford bikes, books, lines.
Or to be, you know, holier than thou. I've got, you know,
exactly,
more or less things than you.
Exactly. You know, this is, I think, an unhelpful kind of distraction from a debate about what kind of consumer, what is the role for buying new things and what is the role for repairing old things and what's the relative size of our stuff-making economy versus the size of our service providing economy. They're interesting questions that we can debate, but arguing about whether my fashion choices are superior to yours is that's a cultural fight, but that's got nothing to do with environmentalism or inequality.
So, at what is the peak buying season of the year?
Atari would like to thank you for taking us into your homes. We wish you all a happy holiday.
What is Richard's advice to change our culture without being a Grinch?
Well, the book's on sale now.
And buy it and treasure it.
Treasure it. And, or if you hate it, find a new home for it and pass it on to someone else. I used to really spurn gifts and Christmas, and I was really down on it, and I'm not anymore. I realised many years ago that my birthday and Christmas were special days for my parents as well as for me, and that they wanted to enjoy, there's a hint in that word, enjoy, they wanted joy for themselves by giving me something to show me that they loved me. And I kept turning my nose up at that. So I don't anymore. I really don't. I think gifts are important, but gifts don't have to be new stuff. I had a housewarming years ago, and I knew people would buy me stuff, and I was in my piss-off, don't-buy-me-stuff phase. But I knew people would buy me stuff, so I told people to bring me a recipe. And it was a great party.
Mm.
I got 30 great recipes that night, and I still use some of them to this day. So I think Christmas is part of our culture. There's no doubt that the giving of gifts is part of nearly all human cultures. So we don't have to spurn Christmas and become the Christmas Grinch to be far more thoughtful about what that means. Bake someone a cake rather than buy them some crap. Put together a montage of photos or old videos. No, I mean it. Like, there are things that people that you know and you love that they'll actually treasure and enjoy that won't use up almost any or possibly none of the world's scarce resources. And if we kind of try to reshape our economy rather than worry about its size all the time, as I said, if we've got a bigger maths tutoring sector or a bigger dance lesson sector and a smaller $2 shop sector, well, more people will be employed.
Yeah.
Far less natural resources will be consumed, and the evidence suggests we'll probably be happier. So, yeah, you don't have to be the Grinch at Christmas, but we should all think about why we've been encouraged by our culture to waste money on stuff that we know people don't want at this time of year. It's great for the people that sell the stuff we don't want.
Yeah.
Like, they are into that. We shouldn't blame them for it. But whether we keep falling for it, that's partly up to us.
Well, congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
And thank you for chatting to me.
Thank you.
That's been episode 23 of Follow the Money, our pre-Christmas episode, brought to you by the Australia Institute and recorded on the 15th of December 2017. You can buy Curing Affluenza, Richard's new book about why we should buy less stuff, from Black Ink Books, and it's available online or in any good bookshop. Go to our website at tai.org.au/podcast, where you can find all of our back episodes of Follow the Money. They make a great companion on your holiday road trips. Subscribe to Follow the Money on iTunes or wherever you get your favourite podcasts, and don't forget to give us a rating, please. It does help other people to find us. You can follow the Australia Institute on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS. I'm on Twitter at Ebony_Bennett with a double N double T, and Richard is at RDNS_TAI. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy. Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum recorded our title track. Thanks for listening.
It's Christmas time again. Everyone is buying things, but not me. Jump.